sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. With the elections coming up next week, today you'll hear an interview with Green Party candidate for Secretary of State, Mike DeRosa. Mike DeRosa, welcome to the show.
Cheryl, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to speak out.
Yes. One of the things I always appreciate about the Green Party is their stance on 9/11. But maybe you could tell us, what is their position on 9/11?
Well, Green Party wants a new investigation because we believe that 9/11 is a classic casus belli, which is Latin for an act or event that promotes war or is used to justify war. And I think that this is a classic example of this type of situation where this event was used to get us involved in the Middle East and, quite frankly, into endless war.
And not to mention taking away our civil liberties. And I understand that Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate for president, got into a lot of trouble when she put out that letter calling for a new investigation.
Yes. I mean, I think that this is a taboo subject that no one is allowed to say or speak about. And it's too dangerous to ask these questions. And they hide it behind a linguistic trick, which is that essentially this is a conspiracy theory. I would argue that what we have here is a coincidence theory. All of these things that happened on 9/11 are huge coincidence. All elements of our government failed us. Now, maybe that's true and maybe it isn't. I don't know. But I think we have a right to ask a serious question about a serious problem that we have with the theory behind what actually happened on that day. And unfortunately, it is politically impossible to bring this up and to discuss it in a rational and intelligent way.
Yeah, and I think one has to ask oneself, why? Why wouldn't people want to investigate this more and know more about what happened?
So, because 9/11 is the linchpin for all of these wars.
Right.
Just like the sinking of the Maine or the Spanish-American War,
right,
or so, the sinking of the Lusitania for World War I, or Pearl Harbor during the Second World War. And in that case, it was just creating a situation in which, you know, the Japanese might attack us, just setting bait. But here it's much deeper. And I believe that we see this in the Vietnam War. You know, what do we know now about the Gulf of Tonkin? We know that it was a total phony event. So all of these things, and quite frankly, like one CIA agent said, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin is like a trolley car. One comes along every 15 minutes. So if it hadn't been then, it would have been later.
Yeah.
So presidents want to create wars. They need a justification to sell these to the American people. And it's not just America. It's all countries of the world. They all engage in this sort of deception.
Right. The false flag events like this are very common to get what governments want. So, Mike, you're running for Secretary of State on the Green Party against the Democratic incumbent Denise Merrill. There's a Republican, Susan Chapman, and a Libertarian Party candidate, Heather Quinn.
That's correct.
So tell me, what is the responsibility of the Secretary of State?
Well, there are two major focuses for the Secretary of State. The one is dealing with and controlling, for the most part, elections. Obviously, elections are taken care of on the local level, but the Secretary of State has great power and great ability to have oversight and constitutionally has oversight over elections. The other is the creation of charters, also known as LLCs, limited liability corporations or incorporations. These are very important powers. And the problem, as I see it, with Denise Merrill is a very nice person. I respect her, but I also respectfully disagree with her politicizing this office. She's turned it into an outlet, essentially, that is an extension of the Democratic Party. And I could go into detail, but it would take two programs to do it. But I can show you evidence of that. And over again, I feel that this is incorrect, and I feel that it needs to be changed. If I were to become the Secretary of State, I would not politicize the office. What I would do is be the Secretary of State for everyone.
And why are you running? Why do you want to be the Secretary of State for everyone?
Because I see some inherent problems in our elections. And let me start off by simply saying that one of the big issues during this campaign, especially with Denise Merrow, our present Secretary of State, is she's raising questions about security. Well, it was the Green Party, and me in particular, and other people who created this organization called Voter Opportunity Through Election Reform. And we were able in two sessions of the legislature to pass a voter verifiable paper trail system. Now, how did this happen? I was very concerned after the Florida debacle in 2000 that our elections were being stolen. So I did some research and I contacted a very important person in the election field. Her name is Rebecca Mercury. She runs an outfit called Notable Software, and she's an expert in the issue of election machines. She wrote her PhD thesis about it. She published an article, which was very similar to her PhD thesis, called A Better Ballot Box. So I invited her on my program here to speak, and then I got her in front of the legislature to speak about the anomalies that, you know, not necessarily even political anomalies, where candidates were elected because they received the votes of their opponent. And this was not simply a political issue, it was a technological snafu. So we found that most people in the legislature agreed with this idea of going down the road of her system, which she invented, which is the voter verifiable paper system. It's sort of like an SAT test. You fill in the little bubbles, and then you feed it into a scanner. The breakdown in this system is in the audit after the election. We made a big deal about the audit when we passed the law. And I talked to Rebecca Mercury about 8 months ago, and I said, do you think a 5% audit, which is what they reduced it to, both the legislature and I guess the Secretary of State went along with it. I don't know all the details, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that we have to have a statistically significant audit, and 5 or 10% is not it. So if I were to become the Secretary of State, I would craft legislation and bring experts to Connecticut to tell us how to make sure that our elections are free, transparent, open, and correct.
Yes. And speaking about election fraud, basically is what you're alluding to there, what are some of the ways that elections can be skewed, or how does fraud take place?
Well, it's the interface between procedural democracy and technology. And that's where I'm at. That's that point of contact, because they're using technology in ways that are detrimental to free and open elections. And what they're doing is they're using touchscreen modules, which are essentially voting into a black box. And Rebecca Mercury and many other people have written numerous articles, which of course you never read about because they're too dangerous for you to hear or read or see. But the issue is that what you have here is no record. There's no physical record. Not that you're supposed to know how you voted. It's simply there's no physical record of your vote that you can tally after the election. So we have made great strides here. When we passed this law back in 2005, we made a big leap towards saving our state from the kind of problems that they have in Ohio and Florida and Arizona and so forth, which continue to go on. And these businesses are preying off of the industry. And they're also, and I think the reduction in the number of people who vote is related to the fact that many people distrust inherently elections as they are. Plus, we really don't have a choice. We have, you know, diddly-dee and diddly-da. And, you know, however you look at it, we're losing our democracy and we're losing our Constitution.
So one thing that affects the elections, it's not exactly fraud, but it's questionable behavior, is how difficult it is for third parties to get into the action and become a part of the process.
Maybe. Well, that's part of the electoral dilemma, which I would solve if I were elected. We have some of the most draconian laws in the United States, really in the world, for entry. Now, they're not the worst by any stretch of the imagination. There are states in the union that are just unbelievable. But here, we have no actual system in which a third party or independent party or whatever can get full ballot access by doing X. Like, for example, in New York's state, if you get 50,000 votes for governor, you get complete ballot access from dog catcher all the way up to president. Here, you have to petition, petition, petition. Even in the Constitution state, we have unconstitutionality going on. So like when we wanted to get Jill Stein on the ballot 2 years ago, in the last presidential election, what happened was that we ended up having a situation where we had to collect 17,000 signatures. Essentially, we had to collect 7,500 valid signatures, but you have to double the amount or get at least one. You have to get at least 50% beyond the minimum to make it. And there have been many candidates in this election that didn't make it. Like one gentleman was running for U.S. Senate. He didn't make it by a couple hundred signatures. Well, let's look at, you know, Rhode Island. If you want to run for president there, it's 1,000 signatures. In Vermont, it's 1,000 signatures. In Maine, it's 1,000 signatures. In New Hampshire, it's 3,000. In New Jersey, it's 800. As I said before, in New York, you get 50,000 votes for governor and you get full ballot access. So we're sort of an odd state here in the middle of New England and the mid-Atlantic states. And as I said before, there are states that are far worse. But the point is, why is this? And I think that I read an article by the past president of the Political Science Association. It was about 15 years ago. I read a book about it. I read the book. I saw him speak on YouTube. And what he basically said is the two parties are on life support. And there's two things that are keeping them alive. A lot of money, billions of dollars in control over ballot access. And I don't think the Secretary of State, our present Secretary of State, or really any of the Secretary of States that I've ever had any contact, takes any of this very seriously. They see third parties as nuisances. They refer to them as nuisances. You know, when they have to fill out the ballots and there's seven or eight parties, they immediately feel that this is too much work for them. If they like ballot access so much, why don't they fund it? Why did they make it an unfunded mandate for town clerks throughout Connecticut, because that's where the rubber meets the road. The other part is some of these petitions are being actually checked by registrar of voters, which is outrageous. These are the most political people elected in Connecticut, and they have oversight over our petitions.
Right, and I've been involved in those process of doing, getting the petitions, and I know that they throw out a lot of signatures for very ridiculous reasons.
That's right.
Just as an excuse to throw them out, to say that you didn't reach the number that you need. So it's a little game going on there. Yeah. So Mike, tell us about Connecticut's, how does it function? I know we have a paper ballot, right? We scan it. But as you said, the audit is only, what, 5%? So how do we know our elections aren't being stolen by miscounts?
Well, the machines could be fixed. Mr. Schwartzman at UConn is the one who programs all these systems, and I have a lot of faith in him. But again, it comes back to paper ballots and audits. Whatever the statistically significant number is, and I would figure that out by, you know, because I'm not smart enough to figure that out, I would bring in computer experts and statisticians and figure out how we would set up an audit, which would be essentially foolproof. And that could be done. Why they don't do it? It's costly. It's complicated. Plus, they like to steal elections. This has been going on since day one. We all know it goes on. The question is, to what level are we willing to accept it? We know for a fact that in Florida in 2000, the election was stolen. I mean, there's no question about that historically. And yet, nothing is being done about it.
Yeah, so another role of the Secretary of State, as you mentioned, was to work with businesses in the state. And maybe you can tell us, would you change anything there? What would you do to make it either easier or more difficult for businesses?
Okay, I make a distinction between businesses and corporations. Maybe that's an arbitrary decision on my part. I find that corporations are generally not creators of jobs, contrary to what you're being told. They have no connection, really, to people. They're not operating the public interest, necessity, and convenience. They're operating for profit only. There's lots of businesses that also operate for profit. When I was working, before I retired, I was in computer sales, and I did touchscreen systems. That's how I discovered the problems of fraud. But more importantly, I think that what we should be doing is asking whether these corporations or businesses are felons. Have they committed felonies? And if they're operating as illegal institutions, we should either pull their charters or watch them very closely. Why do we allow banks that were engaged in wholesale fraud? I mean, after all, in 2007, 2008, and even to this day, we know that over 6 million people lost their homes, mostly because of fraudulent loans. Now, that's a crime, as far as I'm concerned, and nothing was ever done about it. No bankers ever went to jail except one because he stole money from rich people. And I think the real problem here is we have to enforce the idea of these charters, because these charters give special privileges to the people that own them. For example, if a corporation goes bankrupt, they can't come after your personal assets. They're protected by the charter called, you know, an incorporation. They also get all sorts of tax benefits, all sorts of legal benefits. And now under Citizens United, they're actually people. They actually exist. Well, I don't know about it. I've never heard of, you know, how can you be your mother and father simultaneously? I mean, that's possible under this system that we have and the absurdity of Citizens mm-hmm. United. So I think that's my point of view. I'm open to any suggestions or ideas about how to reform such a system. But I think it's very clear the abuse is going on there and continues to go on. And if the Secretary of State doesn't feel she has or he doesn't have the power, they should talk to the Attorney General or to their prosecutor, their federal prosecutor, to find out, because petty crimes today are being prosecuted all over the place. But white-collar crime is allowed, as they say in France, you know, arsonists are allowed to get away with what they're doing, but those who raise the alarm are immediately arrested.
Yeah, and we had talked about ballot access and how difficult it is for third parties. What would you do if you were elected to Secretary of State to make that easier for independent parties, third parties, to get on the ballot?
Well, I think if you said you have 1,000 or more people registered in your party, you should get ballot access. That would be one system. Another would be a petition of some sort to show some modicum of support, which would allow you, you know, ballot access for 4 to 6 years. There's a variety of ways that it could be done fairly and adequately. I mean, we don't want necessarily to allow any single person to get on simply because they're a citizen, although there's some legal precedent for that. There was a judge that said anybody could walk in the door and get on the ballot. Back in 2002, there was a case. It was a federal judge. He was overruled by the appellate court. But the issue, of course, is our present system is not good for democracy. Choice is what I'm all about. You know, choice is a very important word in American political life. And it represents the idea that people should be treated equally and fairly. And it also gives power to people. And I think this is one of the reasons why it's being denied. It's being denied because they don't want competition. These two parties don't want competition. Mm-hmm. They want other people to vote for them because they're there. And more the two parties look to me more and more like one party.
Right, I agree. And so now people have some options because you're the Green Party
candidate.
Green Party
is right. Candidates. We're running a whole slate. Mm-hmm. So everybody in the state of Connecticut can vote for four of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my point of view is leave something behind. Vote for a Green Party candidate means a couple of things. It means we don't have to go through this crazy ballot access system to petition. It also has another significance that a lot of people don't know, which is if we don't get 1% for one of our four statewide candidates, what's going to happen is that we won't be able to register people in many towns and cities in Connecticut, because we've had this in the past where we didn't run someone for higher office. And especially in Western Connecticut, towns and cities said, well, you didn't run anybody in our district, so you can't register your people here, which is another outrage.
Yeah, I always wonder why we can't just register to vote, why we have to register to vote in a party. You know?
Well, I think the real problem is the first thing that you get as a citizen when you become a registered voter is you get this little card. And question number 9 says, what party would you like to be a member of? And it says Republican, Democrat, or other. How postmodern. You know, I mean, other. And so we have a list of 200 or 300 different parties, one of which is, believe it or not, I haven't made up my mind yet, party. So, you know, there's actually a list somewhere on the website. That's another issue. The website mm-hmm. that the Secretary of State has is not really user-friendly. And I would upgrade that and make it a user-friendly place where candidates could put comments, or we could have all sorts of informative discussions. We have had no debates at all this year. And the organizations that usually do them, they're just not interested in doing them anymore. And there's also procedural problems with third parties. They don't want to allow us in because we are a nuisance. They don't know what to do with us. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you do with opinions and ideas? Do you simply censor them because they're not officially sanctioned by the two major parties?
If you go into a debate, you're going to bring up issues that they don't want to talk
exactly.
about. Exactly. So they don't want you there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, Mike, tell me why should voters vote for you instead of the other candidates running?
Well, I think they should vote for me because I have a track record of being the people's Secretary of State. I took on the issue of voter verifiable paper trail and succeeded. We went to court about the Citizens Election Fund, which we haven't talked about, where I would, if I wanted to qualify for the $750,000 grant for Secretary of State, I would have to collect approximately 210,000 valid signatures, which means 380 or 400 or 450. How many does Denise Merrill or somebody else who will qualify? How many signatures do they have to get? None. None. So if you're a Democrat and Republican, you have to get none. It's impossible for any single person to collect those signatures, even an organization to collect those types of that numbers of signatures. And this goes on in the Constitution state. We got a decision from Judge Underhill that this violated our First and 14th Amendment rights, equal protection under the law. We went to the appellate court. We had one of the appellate judges support us. The other two voted against us. We brought it to the Supreme Court. It was thrown back at us. So, you know, so the bottom line is the fix is in. Third parties, independent candidates are really going to be able to get this money. And this is, quite frankly, very frightening because the judge also pointed out that the grants are too large. They shouldn't be, you know, for governor, $6 million. Our two candidates running for governor refused to take those grants, by the way. They're self-funding themselves for a variety of different reasons.
So a couple other little minor roles that come under the Secretary of State's purview is civic engagement. What would you do to enhance civic engagement?
Well, I think civic engagement is about what do secretaries do? They keep a record of all that goes on. Right now, the history of Connecticut is being done by another agency, the Connecticut Library. In California, it's the Secretary of State that keeps the historical record. And I think history is very important. I graduated back in the Jurassic period from UConn. I paid $620 a year, believe it or not, for room, board, and tuition. Now it's over $30,000 a year. That should tell you about history. You know, we used to have free education in this country. We don't have it anymore. So how do we create civic engagement? By getting people to hear different points of view, to make elections important, to make, for example, one of the proposals I would come forward was to make Election Day a holiday in Connecticut to help people. Only 36.6% of the people vote during midterm elections. Why is that? I think it's partly because there's nothing to vote for. People are discouraged. They see the same pattern over and over again. The Congress has less power than the military-industrial complex. The presidency is under the control of institutions that we don't even know about. These are critical issues. Whether you agree or disagree with me, I mean, that's part of what the Secretary of State ought to be doing, is engaging people in debate and creating technologies and institutions which will encourage voting and not discourage people from being part of the civic process.
And another part of the job of the Secretary of State was, and these are minor, but kind of regulating the justice of the peace, providing the Justice of the Peace manual, and also publications connected to notary publics. Would you do anything to change those? Or?
Yeah, I think that that's somewhat locally controlled. I think that I am a Justice of the Peace. I applied in Wethersfield, Connecticut, and they granted me the office. I think that what I would do is professionalize a little bit more, you know, give training to people. I was just given a form. You're in it. You're it.
Right.
Yeah, you figure it out. Mm-hmm. I think that this is part of, you know, again, unfunded mandates. If we're going to have democracy. We got to pay for it. No one wants to pay for democracy or elections. But if you don't want to pay for elections and you don't want to pay for democracy, you're not going to have a democracy and you're not going to have real elections.
So, Mike, is there anything that you'd like to share with the listeners and voters that we haven't discussed so far?
I would just say go out and vote. I would say vote clean and vote green. I would say vote for the candidate who you believe in, because I believe that the only vote worth casting is one you can believe in.
And Mike, maybe you can also tell the listeners, who are the other Green Party candidates running for other offices in Connecticut?
Well, we have Ed Heflin, who's a big supporter of the public bank. We could do a program about that.
What's Ed Heflin running for?
A controller.
Okay.
And we have Peter Goslin running for attorney general. And we have Jeff Russell running for U.S. Senate. And I'm running for Secretary of State. So we
and
have.
Is it Tom McCormick running?
And Tom McCormick is running for Congress here in the first, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom is 15 years the president of the Sierra Club. He's an anti-nuclear activist, and he's also been around the block on the F-35. And let me leave you with this. The F-35 is going to cost the American taxpayer $1.5 trillion with a T, and our student loans are $1.5 trillion. So my proposal is cancel the F-35 and get rid of all these loans, pay all these loans off to all these students that can't get their careers started and are living at home because they have no other option.
Now, are there other Green Party candidates running, like on a local level? More?
Yes. So what you can do is go to our website, just put in Google Connecticut Green Party. We have pictures, we have biographies, we have information. And if there's someone locally that's running, Barbara Barry's running for the Senate here in Connecticut. And there's a variety of other people running on a local level here in the greater Hartford area, like Mary Sanders is running in the 4th legislative seat here in Hartford. So all these people are worth taking a look at, but a look at other parties too. I would say the important thing is, as I said earlier, vote as if your life depended on it, because it might.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you for running for Secretary of State and all the time and energy that that takes and your commitment to those issues. And thanks for being on the show today.
Well, I really appreciate having the opportunity to be here. And I tip my hat off to you, Cheryl, for allowing me to be here today. And vote clean and vote green.
To learn more about Mike DeRosa or the other Green Party candidates in Connecticut, you can go to their website, which is ctgreenparty.org. And again, that's ctgreenparty.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people!